The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Good afternoon. Get ready for Leadership Leverage with Dr. Robert Denker. No matter what role you play in leadership of your organization or business, you are sure to get helpful secrets that will improve that role. Now here's your host, Dr. Robert Denker.
Hello, good day, and welcome to Leadership Leverage. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Denker, and today on Leadership Leverage, we'll be exploring the topic of values. This is a timely discussion given the BP disaster in the Gulf of Mexico and the recent safety issues attributed to the Toyota Motor Corporation, both companies who, in the eyes of many Americans, have simply disappointed them. And perhaps as important is this topic of values as it pertains to the individual leader. In other words, how effectively you can stand up for your values when pressured by your boss, customers, or shareholders to do the opposite. In a large sense, the ability to voice your values becomes the litmus test for your true ability to lead and develop followership. Much of our dialogue today will center on examining the following questions. Why is it that as leaders, we often know the right thing to do, but have trouble implementing it? How can we find our values voice and become a more effective leader? And what can companies do to better foster and reinforce value-based leadership? To help us navigate this journey today, our guest has experience and the knowledge to help all of us find answers to these questions. I'm referring to the popular and distinguished Dr. Mary Gentile. Mary is Senior Research Scholar at Babson College, Senior Advisor at the Aspen Institute, and an independent consultant based in Arlington, Massachusetts. Previously, she was a tenured faculty member and manager of case research at the Harvard Business School. Currently, Dr. Gentile is Director of Giving Voice to Values, a business curriculum launched by the Aspen Institute and Yale with ongoing support from Babson College. Giving Voice to Values is a pioneering approach to values-driven leadership that has been featured in such article or magazines, rather, as the Financial Times, the Harvard Business Review, Strategy and Business, and in Business Week, and is being piloted in over 100 business schools and organizations globally. Most impressively, her book, Giving Voice to Values, How to Speak Your Mind When You Know What's Right, is out this month from Yale University Press. Let me welcome our guest today, Dr. Mary Gentile. Mary, welcome to Leadership
Leverage. Well, thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here with you.
Mary, I'm curious to know, how did you first participate in developing this notion of giving voice to values? What led you down this path?
Well, I'd love to share that story with you. And first, in the interest of full disclosure, and since we are talking about values, I was not tenured at Harvard Business School. I was there for 10 years, and I ran their case development program and wasn't a faculty appointment. But it's one of those things you need to be clear about in the academic world.
Well, you do, and thank you for that.
That's all right. But your question is an apt one. You know, I've been working in the area of business and values and ethics and the social impacts of business for several decades now. But a number of years ago, around the late 90s, turn of the century, I experienced what I like to call a kind of crisis of faith.
Okay.
Where I began to wonder if teaching ethics in business schools was, in fact, ethical. It's kind of, for me, this grew out of the fact that we would have these, you know, long conversations with students. We would examine these challenging values conflicts in business, often global challenges, and people would go back and forth about what the right thing to do was.
Sure.
And, but in the end, at some point, students might say, you know, Mary, this is all well and good, but in the real world, you can't really act this way. You can't really do these things. The pressures on you are so great that you won't be able to behave in alignment with your values. And that was an answer that I found truly troubling, and I actually stepped back from the work a little while and started to reconsider what I was doing. And the book and the curriculum I've developed around giving voice to values is really my response to that.
So it was really this practicality aspect that drove you to say, I need to look at this a little bit deeper.
Exactly, exactly. I started to feel like it wasn't just a matter of looking deeper, but it was actually a matter of asking a different question. What we tend to ask when we talk about business ethics and business values, both in business education, but also I think often in corporate training contexts and even in our own lives, we tend to do two things. We tend to say, I need to raise my and my students and my employees' awareness about business ethics. I need for them to recognize these ethical challenges and values conflicts when they encounter them in the workplace. And so we develop case studies and stories and readings, and we try and introduce and policies and rules, and we try and, you know, pre-warn them of all these things. And the other thing we try and do is we try and practice analysis. And the question we're asking there is, what is the right thing to do? And we share different models of ethical reasoning, and we help people think through the challenges they can face, because sometimes they're really quite thorny and complex. And I think both of those things are good things to do, but they're answering the question, what is right, and whether I can get it, whether it's, you know, feasible and reasonable to do it. And what we weren't asking in business education, and I think often in corporate training, is once you know what you think is right, how do you get it done? What do you say? To whom? And what will they say back? And then what will you say? And I started to think, that's the piece that we need to add. It's not that we weren't doing a good job of addressing those other issues, but we were not focusing on action. And that's where I was trying to get at.
Well, clearly, you know, I would argue that by the time one reaches a management role, mm-hmm. one does know the difference between right and wrong. So why is it that, or what is it that often stops us from acting on our values at work?
Well, I think there's a number of different things. I mean, I actually agree with you that in a lot of the most egregious cases, the cases that make it to the front pages of the newspapers,
sure.
often they're not only unethical, often they're even illegal, you know, and so they're often clear to a lot of us. There are those issues that are complicated, that are gray areas, that are kind of right versus right kind of answer, or wrong versus wrong kinds of choices, and those are the ones that I think we spend a lot of time analyzing in business schools. But I think the ones you're talking about and the ones I'm talking about, where it's fairly clear, there's a different set of factors that come into play for why we don't often, or we sometimes don't act on them. I think one of the things is simply what we call adult socialization. The idea being that you may have learned what the right thing to do is at your mother and father's knee, as people often will say. But then when you get into an organization, there are a set of norms and a set of pressures that, as one professor I interviewed had already referred to it, he said, it, you learn the professional rationalizations. And what he meant by that were things like, the market made me do it, or meritocracy is such that it doesn't really matter. The best people are always going to make it to the top. I don't have to worry about that. Or I don't have to worry about the impacts of some of my choices because the market will already take that into account and discount for them. And so they, you know, it's not going to have to be my worry. So there's a lot of professional rationalizations and norms and pressures. But I think beyond that, the more mundane and the more common and the more everyday things are just pressures of groupthink. and time pressures, and the pressures of, you know, the short-term quarterly financial reports versus longer-term returns and considerations, or even the pressure of personal loyalty. You know, you're my buddy, and you're asking me to do something.
Oh, absolutely. And that's a big one, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that loyalty issue gets back to power relationships, and in power relationships, it plays a huge impact on what one makes and the job role that one has and one's future.
Exactly, exactly. So the loyalty questions, they take different forms. They can take the form of, you're talking about power in terms of, you know, if my boss is asking me to do something, there's certain kinds of organizational power and leverage. There's also the sort of interpersonal loyalty where you're my friend and we've worked together on this team for a long time, and that's a different kind of influence, but it can be just as powerful, if not more so.
Do you see a common set of excuses out there?
Yeah, actually, you know, there's a lot of different, I call them reasons and rationalizations for why we feel we can't do what we think, what our values direct us to do. And there's a lot of them, but there's four categories that I see coming up most frequently, different iterations of them in lots of different situations. You know, one of them is the idea that everybody does it. This is standard operating procedure. And the follow-on of that is that so everybody is already expecting it. It's mm-hmm. built into the system, so you don't need to worry about it. A second one that we hear a lot is it's not a big deal. It's not material, if you want to use the language of accounting. It's not going to make a big enough difference in the life of the individual employee, in the life of the customer, in the financial returns that we need to worry about it. A third one is it's not my responsibility. You know, this is really something that my boss needs to worry about, or internal audit needs to worry about, or R&D, research and design, needs to worry about, or it's something the supply and chain management folks should be paying attention to. And then the fourth category that we see a lot is one that you and I have already talked a little bit about, which is this whole issue of loyalty. You know, on the one hand, I want to be honest, I want to demonstrate integrity, but on the other hand, I don't want to quote-unquote betray a friend or a boss or a colleague.
And I think every one of us who's been a part of an organization, regardless of what size, has seen these, as you term them, rationalizations, I call them excuses, play out. You know, that everyone does it. It's not material.
Mm-hmm.
It's not my responsibility, that throwing it over the wall, as we once said in the corporation I worked for.
Right.
And, of course, this issue of loyalty, which I talked about from a power aspect. We need to take a commercial break, Mary.
Mm-hmm.
When we do, I want to come back and talk more about these excuses, and really this whole concept of the importance of voice. Can we do that?
Absolutely. Thank
Great.
You.
Great. We'll be right back. Stay tuned to Leadership Leverage.
Stocks, bonds, investment opportunities, financial news, and talk. We can help. Call us now toll-free, 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Since the year 2000, RD and partners have been helping client organizations across North America and Europe achieve breakthrough performance by providing practical solutions for talent identification, talent development, and improved team performance. Our services include executive coaching and onboarding, sales selection tools, validated to predict sales success, web-based pre-employment and development assessments for executive, managerial, supervisory and professional positions, talent reviews and team coaching, as well as competency modeling, including web-based custom 360 surveys. At RD & Partners, we don't arrive with ready-made solutions. Our service offerings have to fit the context of every aspect of your company, its markets, competitors, strategy, and culture. please contact us today at rdpusa.com or by calling 888-600-7457. We look forward to helping you be successful by building and retaining your high-performance talent.
Entrepreneurial Insights is your weekly excursion into the world of business ownership. Presented by Sunbelt Business Brokers, the leading business brokerage and intermediary firm in the world, Entrepreneurial Insights will examine critical issues that impact both existing and prospective business owners. If you own or want to own a small business, listen for Entrepreneurial Insights with John Davies, Pino Bocchinello, and Matt Ottaway, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Leadership Leverage with your host, Dr. Robert Danker. If you have a question or comment about today's program for Dr. Danker or his guests, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or if you prefer, send an email to info@rdpusa.com. Now back to Leadership Leverage.
Welcome back to Leadership Leverage. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Danker, and we've been talking today on the very timely topic of values and how to give voice to them. Our guest today is Dr. Mary Gentile, Director of Giving Voice to Values, a business curriculum launched by the Aspen Institute and Yale with ongoing support from Babson College. Most importantly, Mary is also the author of a book entitled Giving Voice to Values, How to Speak Your Mind When You Know What's Right, which comes out this month from Yale University Press. Before break, Mary, we were discussing some of the common excuses that you hear that people give for not acting on their values in the workplace. And I know in your writings that you've done, and specifically in your book, Giving Voice to Values, How to Speak Your Mind When You Know What's Right, you discuss the importance of voice. Can you share with us what you mean by having a voice?
Yeah, absolutely. This is kind of an interesting idea for me. It's not something that I started with when I was working in this field of business ethics, but a number of experiences and some research that I saw brought me to this place. And I guess maybe the most compelling was some research that I saw around moral courage and altruism. And these particular researchers, Douglas Haneke and Perry London, had done a set of interviews with rescuers, people who had risked their lives during World War II to preserve the lives of others.
Sure.
And they interviewed them in depth to try and understand, you know, what was it in the experience and the makeup and the character of these individuals that led them to be able to act in these ways on their values when so many others who presumably, you know, did not necessarily agree with what was going on were unable to do so. And you know, as is the way with that kind of research, they did uncover a set of characteristics that seemed to be common in these people. But the one that stuck out for me, the one that really resonated for me, probably because I was an educator, was that the people who had behaved in this way, who had demonstrated this kind of altruism and courage, reported that at an earlier point in their lives, usually as young adults, they'd had the experience with someone older, more senior, respected. It might have been a boss, it might have been a teacher or a parent or a mentor, but they'd had the experience of rehearsing out loud what would you do if, and then anticipating certain kinds of moral conflicts. And what seemed to be interesting about it was that they had done two things. They'd literally pre-scripted themselves. They'd identified words, but they'd also said them out loud. And they'd said them out loud in front of someone that they respected and trusted. And this just seemed really interesting to me. I thought, wow, we don't do this in education. A lot of what we do is almost the opposite. A lot of times we rehearse all the reasons why it's so hard to voice and act on your values. And it's not that I'm a Pollyanna and think that you shouldn't know those things. I think you should know them. You should be realistic, and you should think about them because they enable you to be more effective if you know what's coming. But I also think, why don't we actually give people the opportunity to practice arguments, to voice arguments and responses and positions for doing what they believe is the right thing to do in a particular situation.
And Mary, why is saying it out loud an important dimension here?
It's interesting. There's a lot of research now coming from lots of different fields, from the fields of social psychology, the fields of cognitive neuroscience, and there's also, just our own sort of personal experiences and common sense. But basically, at the heart of it, what it is rehearsal. It's practice. The idea is, I think the analogy that works the best for me is, I remember taking a self-defense class years ago when I was still at Harvard, and they told us there about the concept of muscle memory and about how if you practice the kinds of moves that you would need to make if you were ever attacked, and you practice them in a simulated situation which generates some of the same kinds of tensions and experiences, your body will remember, your muscles will remember these things, sometimes even when cognitively you may be in somewhat of a state of shock. Well, I started thinking about that, and I was thinking, a lot of times when we don't voice our values, it's because all those rationalizations that we were talking about a few minutes ago, those come flooding into our minds. In fact, I tend to call them preemptive rationalizations, because we're aware of those before anything else, and sometimes they stop us from even thinking about what the alternative is. But if you, in fact, create opportunities where you have the space and the time to say out loud the other arguments, the other positions, the idea is that you are creating a kind of muscle memory, that you are rehearsing them, that they're becoming more of a default, and that it's easier for you to go there when you, in fact, are in those kinds of situations.
So, Mary, a leader who may be listening today to us, how do they develop their voice? What might be the first two or three steps to effectively get them to do that if they want to?
Well, I think there's a number of things. When I talk to people, I interviewed people and asked them basically the simple question. I said, tell me about a time when you encountered values conflict in the workplace and how you handled it. And I tried to learn from the stories that they told me. And what was one of the interesting things is that a number of times when I would ask people that question, they would say, okay, I'll tell you about a time when I voiced my values in the workplace, but let me also tell you about some times when I didn't. Mm. And they were doing that, I think, partly because they wanted to be honest. They didn't want to present themselves as, perfect. They didn't want to suggest that this was an easy thing to do, which it clearly is not. But there were also some interesting lessons in that. And out of those interviews, I started identifying a set of principles or pillars that seemed to help people to be more ready, more equipped, more able to voice their values. And one of them is simply acknowledging that choice. And we actually developed an exercise which has been used around the world to really good effect. It's called a Tale of Two Stories. And we invite participants, whether they're students or executives or whoever is involved, to think about a time when you encountered a values conflict in the workplace and you found a way to voice and act on your values. And then you reflect on it and you ask some questions about what motivated me, what made it easier, what made it harder, how do I feel about it. And then we ask you to think about a time when you encountered a values conflict in the workplace and you did not voice and act on your values. And then you answer those same questions, what motivated you, what enabled you, what made it harder, and how do you feel about it. And it's through the structured debrief of that kind of an exercise, and it's something that you can do just as an individual self-reflectively. We do it in groups where there's a kind of structured debrief. But people start to identify a number of things. First of all, I have not encountered anyone yet who can't tell me both kinds of stories. So in other words, we all have, in fact, voiced and acted on our values in some situations.
Oh, we do. And as you're talking, mentioning this, acknowledgement of choice here. That I'm going through my own mind and
recalling Absolutely.
Times that some of these are 20 years ago now.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then we all have those examples when we did, and we all have the examples when we didn't. And what's interesting is when people start talking about what made it easier and what made it harder, we learned several things. We learned that some of the things are pretty widely shared. You know, everybody will say, if I have a boss who is open to people suggesting different points of view, it's easier to do this. You know, if I am in a workplace where there are models of this kind of behavior, it's easier to do this. Other people will, there'll be certain things that make it harder, you know, and they're kind of the reverse of those. And those kinds of things, the ones that are common to everyone, that's your blueprint as a leader. That's the kind of organization that you want to build to make it easier for people to voice and act consistently with their values. But then there's another set of things that are more unique to me or unique to you, Rob. So, you know, if I'm an introvert, there's certain things that make it harder for me. If I don't like to argue, for example.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. Yeah, and the person I'm maybe am disagreeing with maybe is a more of a of an argumentative type. On the other hand, if I'm a real risk taker, then it's harder for me to have to take the cautious route, you know, to have to take the conservative route. And that's really, those are interesting things to identify for another reason. Usually, we do that kind of self-assessment thinking, well, you need to know these things about yourself, so, you know, we're wagging our fingers and saying, you know, you better be careful because you know that you're a risk taker and it might mean that you'll be, you know, less than cautious in these situations. But I say, no, let's look at it entirely differently. Let's look at these characteristics as our strengths, and let's figure out how to frame the ethical or values conflicts we encounter in a way that they play to our strengths. And the reason I do that is because when I was interviewing people, I talked to, you know, I remember talking to a gentleman who said, you know, the reason, he was telling me a story about voicing his values in a real estate deal, and he was saying, you know, the reason I did that, he said, because I've always, I said, how did you bring yourself to do that? How did you find the courage to do that? And he said, well, you know, I've always been a risk taker. I've always been kind of an assertive guy. This felt like it was who I am, you know. And then I was interviewing another person who was talking about, being in a situation where, you know, they stood up to someone who was asking them to share some proprietary information. And I said, how did you do that? Where did you find, you know, the ability to do that? And she said, well, you know, I've always been a cautious person. I've always been kind of fearful, and this seemed like the safest route. And I thought, well, you know, it's very interesting. You know, someone else might have looked at that same situation and thought that it was safer to give in to the person who was pressuring you. And so what I realized is that you need to frame the conflict in a way that feels consistent with who you are so that you can play to your strengths. And
oh, it's being true to yourself.
Being true to yourself, but not just in terms of what you value, but in terms of how you act on that value, how you voice that value. Because I'm going to be more likely to voice my values if I found a way to do so that feels like I know how to do that. I'm better at asking questions, for example, than I am at arguing. So if I can find a way to do this that involves asking the really pointed, clever, helpful, revealing questions, I'm going to be more likely to bring myself to do it.
Outstanding. Outstanding insight here. Mary, we need to take a break.
Sure.
Pay our commercial sponsors. We'll be right back in about a minute and a half. You're listening to Leadership Leverage on Voice America Business.
We're always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network. Get ready for Straight Talk Live with Tanya Walker. From the worlds of business, entertainment, health, and politics, enjoy intimate interviews and spirited roundtable discussions with Tanya's guest experts and friends. Tanya may be best known for her Emmy-nominated role as Alex from ABC TV's One Life to Live, but she's also an award-winning film and Broadway producer with a passion for straight, honest journalism. So don't miss Straight Talk Live with Tanya Walker, Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Business Channel.
Since the year 2000, RDN Partners have been helping client organizations across North America and Europe achieve breakthrough performance by providing practical solutions for talent identification, talent development, and improved team performance. Our services include executive coaching and onboarding, sales selection tools validated to predict sales success, web-based pre-employment and development assessments for executive, managerial, supervisory and professional positions, talent reviews and team coaching, as well as competency modeling, including web-based custom 360 surveys. At RDN Partners, we don't arrive with ready-made solutions. Our service offerings have to fit the context of every aspect of your company, its markets, competitors, strategy, and culture. Please contact us today at rdpusa.com or by calling 888-600-7457. We look forward to helping you be successful by building and retaining your high-performance talent.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
Listening to Leadership Leverage with your host, Dr. Robert Danker. If you have a question or comment about today's program for Dr. Danker or his guests, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or if you prefer, send an email to info@rdpusa.com. Now back to Leadership Leverage.
Welcome back to Leadership Leverage. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Danker, and we've been talking today on the very timely topic of values and how to give voice to them. Our guest today is Dr. Mary Gentile, Director of Giving Voice to Values and author of a new book entitled Giving Voice to Values, How to Speak Your Mind When You Know What's Right. The book is out this month from Yale University Press. Mary, before break, we were discussing some of the salient pillars in terms of learning to give voice to one's values in the workplace. You covered two of these. You covered the pillar of choice, and you covered the pillar of play to your strengths. What other pillar is important for our listeners to know?
Well, I think one of the ones that is most important and was actually surprising to me when I first started doing the conversations and the research that led up to this approach was something I call normalization or normalizing values conflicts. And it really kind of struck me most when I was interviewing a gentleman who was sharing a conflict that he had encountered and had to do with being honest with some colleagues he was working with. And he was involved with mergers and acquisitions. And his firm was representing the acquiring firm, and the people he was working with were executives from the firm that was being acquired. And at one point, they were sitting in the airport, and, you know, understand, he'd been working with these guys over a number of months now, and they'd developed working relationships and even friendships and a good bit of trust, and he was this sort of intermediary consultant. And a couple of these guys sort of turned to him, you know, in the airport and said, okay, you know, you can be straight with us, you know, when this transaction goes forward, we know it will mean changes in jobs, and
right.
Are we going to lose our jobs? And he said, you know, it was funny when I was interviewing him, because the first thing he said is, he said, Mary, I lied. And then he paused, and he said, instinctively, I lied. and then he said, but then he said he went home, and he thought about it. And he thought, you know, if I continue in this work, I'm going to be asked questions like this all the time.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I love my work, he said. You know, I like doing this. and I'm going to be asked these questions, and I need to figure out, how do I feel about it? Do I want to just continue to lie every time it comes up, which, you know, some people do, and they just defend it by saying I'm protecting proprietary, information and my fiduciary responsibility to my employer, and there's some validity to that. And he said, but on the other hand, when I started thinking about it, I thought I also have, a personal duty to people that I've built a trusting relationship with. And he said, I was torn. He said, and then at a certain point, I thought, you know what? This is a normal part of doing this kind of business. This is going to come up a lot.
Comes with the territory.
Exactly. And he said, once I thought about it that way, I didn't have that kind of deer in headlight feeling where I just froze and instinctively lied. Mm-hmm. And instead I thought, you know, I could think about this just the way I think about any other business problem and think, is there an answer that will optimize things for everyone involved? And he said, so I spent, a little bit of time, not that much, but I thought about it, and I anticipated, and I thought, there is an answer I can give when this comes up, which both is true to my fiduciary responsibility, mm-hmm. but is also honest and, in fact, useful to my listener. And he said, and I came up with a little script for myself where I explained that, even if I knew the answer, you all know I can't share that kind of information. I have a responsibility. However, I've been in these kinds of transactions many times before, and there's certain things I've learned. And here are the things that if I were in your shoes, I would be doing to make myself most protected no matter what happened. And then he came up with a set of suggestions that he could give these people that were more than just pablum, that actually had some real useful ideas in them, because he had, in fact, been in this situation before, but that were also did not involve him saying one way or the other what was going to happen. And he said, someone could say that was just, covering my ass because I didn't mm-hmm. really tell them. But on the other hand, they knew I couldn't.
Well,
he said, and so what I wanted to do was give them an answer that was respectful to them, because that's what I owed them. I owed them a respectful and useful answer. And to me, that was an interesting solution, and it came because he normalized the situation. He said, this isn't such a big deal, and if I think about it in advance, I can deal with it. So that's one of the principles we realize, is that when people anticipate the situations, but not just anticipate them in terms of, oh my God, I'm going to run into these situations, woe is me, but anticipate in a way that allows them to think clearly about them as solvable business problems, that in fact reduces the anxiety and allows people to draw on a greater set of resources in terms of their own skills to try and handle them.
So again, the key is almost visualizing.
Exactly.
And then
exactly.
Second, it's rehearsal, right? It's this practice.
Exactly. Right? You got it.
Very much, really, some of the basic foundations in sports psychology.
Exactly. And that's why I use the example around the self-defense class. And I talk to people about, when you're learning a sport, you break it down into pieces,
right.
You practice those pieces, it becomes muscle memory. So that's another one of the principles. I think another principle I want to make sure I have a chance to mention, since this is a program on leadership, is purpose. One of the things that I found when I talked to people is that part of what enabled people to both find the courage in themselves to voice and act on their values, but also to come up with compelling and persuasive arguments and action plans, was when they defined their purpose in their work broadly and explicitly. In other words, when they tried to define what they were doing as not necessarily just maximizing this quarter's return, but creating a sustainable business.
Mary, do you have an example for our listeners?
Yeah, it was interesting when I remember talking to a guy who had just been promoted to, or was just being promoted to CFO in his firm.
Okay.
And just as he was taking on the new role, his senior colleagues came to him and said, we need to adjust our financial reporting this quarter because of some unexpected changes. And the gentleman who was being promoted to CFO felt that the adjustments crossed the line. He thought they were over the line. And he was saying, you know, here I am in this situation where I can say, gee, I'm just getting into this position. These guys are going to be my colleagues. I need to be able to work with them. Do I want to, you know, really, you know, irritate them just as I'm moving into this role?
Right.
You know, don't I want to just sort of go along and I can work on things later? But on the other hand, he was saying, but if I do that now, I'm setting a pattern for who I am in this position. And so he said, how do I want to define my purpose here? Do I want to define my purpose in terms of making the easiest and most, you know, painless entry into this position? Or do I want to define my purpose as actually leading this organization in a new and important direction around integrity? And he decided to do the latter. He actually decided to launch a program within the company that was, I think they called it Integrity is the Bottom Line or something, but it was a program specifically around getting employees to, you know, understand how important it was to report information accurately and honestly in all situations. And because he was launching this program throughout the company, it kind of became moot whether or not he could acquiesce to his colleague's request. He obviously couldn't. And so he basically just shifted the conversation to a broader playing field. And he went to his CEO and explained, you know, why he was launching this program. And, you know, he said he just, you know, it was one of those, I'll ask forgiveness rather than permission. Mm-hmm. But in fact, he had an assessment that if he was clear and persuasive and compelling, he believed his CEO would go along with this, which he did. You know, and I think he concluded that, you know, if I do this now, then it's going to be so much harder later on, and this is who I want to be, so I'm going to define my purpose in a broader, deeper way, which gave him the internal resources to act. And a lot of times defining your purpose broadly in that way allows you to be more courageous. It also gives you different arguments to draw on, but it also, it's a lot of it is really about, a lot of this whole approach is about framing situations in a way that it makes it easier for me to do what I would like to do in the best of all possible circumstances.
And clearly it takes a lot of what I often refer to as leadership courage to do these things. I mean, to come up with a purpose that might be a purpose that's a little bit new to an organization or different in an organization or not readily acceptable in an organization.
Although it's interesting, this individual said that he felt that there were a lot of things already in place in the organization that were consistent with what he was trying to do, and he decided he was going to play to those rather than pointing out places where the organization might be broken. He was going to point out the places where it already espoused these values, and let's make sure that we're living up to the best of what we try to be. I mean, it's interesting what you said about requiring courage. One of the ideas that's kind of become clear to me in doing this work is that if you practice some of these principles and you actually practice these scripts and these ways of thinking about your business challenges, that you're becoming more morally competent, I like to say. You're becoming, you have all those four reasons and rationalizations I mentioned earlier in the show. You actually have some responses to those arguments that come more readily to you, and that you are able to be just as creative and just as persuasive around an ethical issue as you might be around trying to sell a new business idea or a new product or a new organizational plan. And so if you become more morally competent in that way, I think you actually don't have to be quite as heroically morally courageous because
Mary,
once again,
I want to talk about
you have more skills.
Mary, I want to talk about how to become more competent,
mm-hmm.
really get into some of the elements of the curriculum that you're offering. I understand it's free. I want to talk about that when we come back after commercial break. You're listening to Leadership Leverage. We'll be right back.
up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790.
The experts are here.
Voice America Business Network. Are you ready to grow your business? Listen for the Independent Business Owners Show with your coach, Rick Corrado. This entertaining talk radio program will bring you the tools to help increase your business. You'll learn sales success, time management, lead generation, business development, life balance, and much more. Rick Corrado is here to help you take your business to the next level. Listen for the Independent Business Owners Show, heard live every Monday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Network.
Since the year 2000, RDN Partners have been helping client organizations across North America and Europe achieve breakthrough performance by providing practical solutions for talent identification, talent development, and improved team performance. Our services include executive coaching and onboarding, sales selection tools, validated to predict sales success, web-based pre-employment and development assessments for executive, managerial, supervisory and professional positions, talent reviews and team coaching, as well as competency modeling, including web-based custom 360 surveys. At RDN Partners, we don't arrive with ready-made solutions. Our service offerings have to fit the context of every aspect of your company, its markets, competitors, strategy, and culture. Please contact us today at rdpusa.com or by calling 888-600-7457. We look forward to helping you be successful by building and retaining your high-performance talent.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Listening to Leadership Leverage with your host, Dr. Robert Danker. If you have a question or comment about today's program for Dr. Danker or his guests, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or if you prefer, send an email to info@rdpusa.com. Now back to Leadership Leverage.
Welcome back to Leadership Leverage. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Danker, and we've been talking today on a very timely topic of values and how to give voice to them. Our guest today is Dr. Mary Gentile. Mary is Director of Giving Voice to Values, a business curriculum launched by the Aspen Institute, along with Yale University, and with ongoing support from Babson College. As important to that, she is also the author of a new book that's coming out this month entitled Giving Voice to Values, How to Speak Your Mind When You Know What's Right. Mary, you were talking about, before we went on to break, this whole issue of how one develops competence in giving voice to their values in the workplace. In the time that's remaining, I want you to talk about this curriculum that you've developed that really teaches leaders within organizations how to do just that.
Thanks, Rob. Well, actually, this whole idea of giving voice to values, I developed it with an eye to its use in MBA programs. I was working with a number of leading business schools around the world, and I, you know, would increasingly hear, you know, the lament that what are we teaching in business schools, even though I knew a lot of wonderful faculty who were teaching both responsible business and business ethics. Mm-hmm. And so I created this curriculum. It's all available online at
www. And it's free, right?
It's free, givingvoicetovalues.org. We make it free to educators. It's designed to be flexible and modular. You can, you know, go and find, you know, an exercise or a piece of material that would fit in your finance class or your operations class or your management class, or you can design a whole course around it if you want. But I designed it to be very flexible. I started thinking it would only be used in MBA programs, but now I'm getting requests. It's being used in undergraduate institutions and executive programs, and I'm starting to be approached by corporations who are interested in adapting it for their use, nonprofits, schools of engineering, liberal arts. So people, I think, at heart recognize that it's not rocket science. This approach really is simply saying, let's ask a different question. Instead of asking what is the right thing to do or whether we can get it done, we ask, how would you get it done once you know what you think is right? And then people are able to really think in creative ways. We've drawn on social science research, we've drawn on management research, we've drawn on case examples, and we've tried to create a set of tools for people to create persuasive scripts and action plans. So it's now being used on 6 continents. I'm partnering with faculty in India and in China and Australia and all over the U.S. and Europe who are using it in their programs.
Now, can an individual leader, and once again for our listeners who may have missed it, where do they go to obtain?
They go to www.givingvoicetovalues.org.
And can an individual leader go on there and kind of pick and choose where to begin, or is it a modular program where we start, you know, week one, week two?
It's entirely flexible. You can pick and choose. If someone goes on that site, they'll find there's an annotated table of contents, there's sample syllabi, there's different structures, and they can contact me. The materials on the website are all free. They're the student materials. Faculty can approach me, and I'll send them the actual teaching notes, which are only available to faculty. And businesses and other organizations that have approached me, we've worked to customize things so that it might be more effective for their organizational settings.
Yeah, for their particular situation that they might be encountering.
Exactly. And what's really been fun for me is meeting up with faculty in other parts of the world. They're saying, you know, this works for me, but I need to have examples that are set in Indian businesses, that are set in the particular climate in China. And so I'm working with people to develop similar case studies and similar exercises, but that are based in different regions in the world, which has been very exciting.
I think it's exciting that you've put together this knowledge. I've had the chance to go to the website. I've looked at some of the material. Mary, it's overwhelming. I mean, I thought there would just be a little bit there, but there's a ton of stuff.
Well, it's good to hear that from you, because being who I am, I'm always aware of what is still in the works and what I'm still working on. We always have, you know, 15 pieces that are, you know, in the pipeline, circling the airport, waiting to land. So it's good
to
hear that.
If you were an individual leader, where would you jump in on that curriculum?
If I were an organizational leader, I think the first thing I would do is take a look at The Tale of Two Stories, and I might also read the essay, Ways of Thinking About Our Values in the Workplace, because I think that those two pieces give you a great overview. And then what I would do is think about my organization and try and identify, do I have compelling stories close to home that I see as models of how people in my organization have found ways to voice and act on their values? Because those are the stories that you want to hold up. Those are the arguments and the skills that you want your other employees to practice, and that will make it more compelling for them.
Outstanding. Mary, what's your best advice for those people who are just emerging as leaders in their organizations today?
Well, I guess I would say, don't believe that it's impossible to act on your values. I mean, when I interviewed people who were very junior, they'd often say, I have to wait till I'm in the C-suite. I have to wait till I have power and authority and legitimacy and relationships and clout, and I'm in a policy-setting situation. And when I talk to people very senior, they'd say, well, if I were more junior, I'd have less at stake. But you know, here I am, I have all these people relying on me. And so one of the things I learned is that there's an excuse, as you would put it, or a rationalization, as I would put it,
right.
No matter where you are in the organization. But nevertheless, there were people at every level in the organization who found effective strategies. You just have to figure out that there are different tools depending on what your degrees of freedom are and, you know, what your particular skills are.
Well, I certainly enjoyed the conversation today with you. I've learned a lot. I trust most of the listeners have, too. Again, I commend you for the gratitude that you have in the work that you've done to develop this set of curriculum around giving voice to values, to put it out there today for free, so that people can use it and can learn it and to become more effective. So I want to thank you for being part of the program, Leadership.
Well, thank you, Rob. It's been a great opportunity to talk about it. And I'm grateful to Yale and Aspen and Babson College for their willingness to support that.
Absolutely. And your book has come out, correct?
Yes, it is out. It's very exciting. The website is marygentile.com, and you can see reviews and excerpts and all of that.
And again, that's Mary's book, Giving Voice to Values, How to Speak Your Mind When You Know What's Right. Mary, again, thank you for being part of the program.
Thank you, Rob.
Next week on Leadership Leverage, we'll be having a lively discussion about the importance of building your leadership brand. Our guests will be the distinguished David Aldrich and Norm Smallwood, co-founders of the RBL Group, a consulting firm who are trusted advisors to some of the world's top companies. So please join me every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, right here on Voice America Business. To all of our listeners, thank you for being part of Leadership Leverage. Until next time, I'm your host, Dr. Robert Denker, and the doctor is out.
Thank you again for tuning in to Leadership Leverage this afternoon. Please tune in again next Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern Time for another edition of Leadership Leverage with Dr. Robert Denker on the Voice America Business Channel.